Some months, you're flooded with jobs and make multiple placements. Other months, a big fat zero. This feast and famine cycle isn't just stressful, it's holding you back and keeping you from real predictable growth. Here's the good news. There's a reason it's happening, and you can fix it. The 7-Figure Freedom Scorecard is a free tool designed for recruitment business owners. In less than 10 minutes, it evaluates your firm across the 6 key pillars of sustainable growth: clients, candidates, team, operations, marketing, and strategy. Your personalized scorecard will reveal what's working and what's broken, and the fastest way to build a recruitment business that generates consistent 7-figure revenue month after month. Stop riding the revenue roller coaster and take the free scorecard now at recruitmentcoach.com/scorecard.
You said, oh, what a great culture for our employees. I think it can be a frustrating culture.
Okay.
You know, we say that we're like a 25-year-old startup. There's still this energy that I can imagine for some of the employees can be frustrating at times. And, you know, they'll say that, and that's cool. I'd rather them be frustrated with too much work, too much energy, too much craziness than be bored.
How many of the people that you place are still in the role 12 months later? For many recruiters, that's not something they measure closely. My guests today use retention as one of their core metrics, and 90% of their placements are still in the role after 1 year, which is why they're confident enough to back their work with a 12-month guarantee.
We have a lot of debates about our guarantee length. So we do offer a 12-month guarantee, and it's really been great for us. We do see a lot of success. We know that that's unusual for the market for very valid reasons, but for us, we have such a thorough process that we do have 90% success rate of our placement staying a year or longer.
Their retention rate, placement guarantee, and their ideal state model that underpins the recruiting process have become key differentiators that help them stand out in a crowded market.
We're not another yes person to our clients. They bring us in because we challenge them. And so, you know, Jess, you were talking about like the, we understand the culture. We also understand like the managers and the presidents and the leaders really well. And so, you know, we can say to John, the owner of ABC Company, how is this type of candidate going to work with you? I mean, John, we know that you, when you really get your head down, you can be pretty hard, pretty, you know, rough to work with. And we can really talk to them very personally about, you know, we've experienced this personality trait. We've experienced like how you work and operate under stress as a business owner. How is this person going to interact with this?
I'm Mark Whitby, and you're listening to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. My guests today are Lewis Waite and Jessica Multaff from Alinity, a consulting firm that have been working with privately held and family-owned businesses for 25 years. They're also clients of ours here at Recruitment Coach. Alinity began as an HR and organizational development consultancy, and the recruiting practice grew out of the advisory work that they were already doing with clients.
We were having these strategic, like human capital conversations with our clients who are generally mid-market size companies. We would be talking about, oh, it'd be great if we could get this role or if we had this person. We were farming out a lot of the recruitment. And in doing that, we became aware that recruitment by other people was not as involved, was not as, I don't know, deeply caring as we would like it to be. And so we thought, well, let's have a go at it.
In this episode, you'll hear how that background shaped a very different kind of recruiting firm. One that wins retained searches, delivers RPO projects, and builds long-term client partnerships that generate more predictable revenue. All right. Welcome, Lewis and Jess. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Great.
Absolutely. This has been a long time in the making. I've wanted to get you guys onto the podcast. So excited that we are finally doing this. And Jess, I think you and I first spoke, 3 years ago, something like that? And you found me through the podcast. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. I stumbled upon your podcast several years ago, and I found it so valuable and helpful, and I've been hooked ever since. So that is how this all came to be.
Fantastic. Actually, do you know what might be good? Because there's two of you, could you both just explain your roles at Alinity?
Absolutely. So my role is technically the Director of Talent Solutions, and essentially leading all of our recruitment engagements with our clients. And that consists of anything from retained search to more hourly staffing support for entry-level roles and RPO.
Yeah, and I'm Lewis Waite, and I am the Director of Client Solutions. We have two sides of our business, and one is really employer services in terms of like HR and organizational development and effectiveness. And so I work mainly on that side and then partner with Jess on some recruitment OD work. But really, I'm charged with being the chief cheerleader and brand rep of Alinity in the local area and trying to scale growth for the organization.
Awesome. So tell me the story of how you both got involved with Alinity, because it's different to our typical podcast guests. So why don't we just set the context with that? And then I'd love to dive into, you know, how you guys have built the business, the services you offer, how you do marketing. You've got some really like innovative ideas that I think will be extremely valuable for people to hear.
I could probably start this one because the company was started 25 years ago. We were celebrating our 25th year full year in business by my father-in-law. So that's probably a close connection there. So we're really a second generation business now. Bill left the Marines and was like, what am I going to do? And he tells the story that he did a SWOT analysis in his basement of himself. And he landed on, I don't know why he would want to, but landed on HR consultant. And so really started, just hung a shingle and built a business starting in the 2000s and with HR compliance. That gradually evolved to more organizational development work and some training. So that's kind of three of our four pillars. And then we were having these strategic, like human capital conversations with our clients who are generally mid-market size companies. And we would be talking about, oh, it'd be great if we could get this role or if we had this person. And we were farming out a lot of the recruitment. And in doing that, we became aware that recruitment by other people was not as involved, was not as deeply caring as we would like it to be. And so we thought, well, let's have a go at it. And that was about 15 years ago. And that kind of rounded out the four legs of the chair, so to speak, of the fourth service, which is Talent Solutions today. I joined the company 10 years ago when we moved back to America, originally from Southeast England. We're based in Cincinnati as a company. And asked Bill, my father-in-law, is there any opportunity for me to work in a family business? I really love family business. And I know Jessica shares that kind of, we love the dynamic and just what it brings, this extra edge to a company. So we do a lot of family private business work. And so came in 10 years ago. And about a year after that, Jess came on board. And so it might be good for Jess to take the story from here and where she came in.
Definitely. So we'll circle back on some of the key things you've introduced, like having multiple service offerings within the Alinity group, as well as the dynamics of a family business and the pros and cons of that. Jess, tell us your connection with Alinity first.
Sure. It's an interesting story how I landed here, but essentially, before I joined the recruitment world, I was pursuing an opera career. So I went to school for classical music, vocal performance, and loved it. But I was at a crossroads just thinking, it's just a different lifestyle, a lot of gigging, and I wanted to stay close to home. So I ended up getting a job at Tech Systems, and they're I'm sure many people are familiar with them, an IT staffing and solutions company. And Bill, the owner of our firm, his son worked there. And so at one point he said, "Hey, I'm going to go work for my dad. I'd love for you to come with me." And that's really how I ended up joining Alinity about, gosh, 8-9 years ago.
How do I not know that you're an opera singer? This is like a revelation.
You will break this equipment if you ask her to sing. We did that once in the office and glasses shattered.
Wow.
No, come
I would
on.
Love it's to a hear powerful that sometime. Maybe at our next annual summit, Jess, what do you think?
Yes. Oh, I'm in.
On stage. Right. I mean, she's a performer, a natural performer.
Wow. Oh, yeah. This is okay. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's super interesting. So you were at Tech Systems and you came along to Alinity. So before we dive into kind of like strategy and, you know, scaling a business and all that stuff, you touched on something, Lewis, which is the dynamic of, well, first of all, there's family businesses, but then also the fact that you're the son-in-law of the founder, and it strikes me that could be a unique situation to be in as well. So what's that like?
I feel that's a very PC way of asking the question.
I love this question.
The dynamic between my father-in-law and I, Bill, is just, it couldn't be better.
That's cool.
I think one of the biggest things that I learned pre-emigration over to America was that he and I fundamentally and philosophically aligned on just business, you know, ethical, you know, business, best practice business, like family businesses, privately held companies, not the large corporations, but the ones that really drive local economies. And we just fundamentally aligned on a whole spectrum of issues. And I still to this day we geek out a lot on it. That we're in such a privileged position to help the clients we work with. And I just can't get part, you just can't get around that. Like Bill and I and Jess, I just deep within us love the work. And so we don't really disagree or have too many issues with the day to day. And then we just are very conscious of not talking too much shop on a Sunday afternoon when we're having dinner with each other or things like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, those are enjoyable conversations. So it doesn't feel like it's work. And so like, we feel very lucky to do what we do. But I really don't have that reaction that most people do to, oh, you work with your in-law. And it's actually a wonderful experience for me. I think Bill probably has his moments with me, but it's been wonderful.
All right, that's cool. That's awesome. So let's talk about having your unique evolution, because you started out HR consulting and then organizational development, training, and then the recruitment side has grown out of that. I think that is so powerful to have multiple revenue streams, right? Because I'd say the vast majority of, certainly all the huge recruiting firms have that to some extent, but most small ones don't. They usually only have one thing. They either do, direct hire or executive search, or they do, contract or temporary placements, or they have some kind of HR consulting. And it's just such a stronger, you mentioned four legs of a chair, which is a great analogy because it's sturdier, right? It's fun. I've never told this story before. When I was growing up, my parents, so I was born in the 70s, and there was this, my parents' dining room table, it was round, or you could extend it and like put extra leaves in the middle, right? But the chairs were designed to fit around a circular table. It was like a design aesthetic in the 70s that the chairs could completely tuck in underneath the table. So what that meant is they had three legs, so one at the front and two in the back. And so, but what ended up happening is the chairs would constantly, people would fall under the table on a regular basis, especially if we had dinner guests, because we were used to it, right?
So
we were
used to
balancing on a chair with three legs, but people would come over for dinner and they would like almost guaranteed they were going to fall on the floor at some point during dinner. It's just not as stable as having four legs. So can you speak to that a little bit in terms of, the obvious benefits, but maybe you could elaborate as to how those parts of the business complement each other. And then also any challenges that go along with trying to build something like that.
I know I could take it because I know what Bill kind of went through at the very start of starting Alinity. One of the like critical factors for Bill was retained revenue. This model that you wouldn't have to constantly chase revenue. And so take recruiting out of the picture for a second. Really, the ideal state back in the day was finding mid-market groups that needed HR support on a retained basis that we could ultimately be their partner by their side day by day, helping them overcome the people challenges, the organizational challenges that they had. And so that was like the birth of our financial model. Because, Bill, being a one-person shop, all the while you're not working with clients, you're business developing. And all the while you're business developing, you're not working with clients. And so he needed to overcome that. And that was through the retained HR model.
So just to press pause here for a second, is that like a subscription or how does that work?
I mean, you could describe it as a subscription. I mean, the subscription model is very trendy now, I suppose. But really it's, we'll sit down with you. You've got this overall HR program, organizational development program that you want focused on, probably built up of many different initiatives. And so we'll build that out in like a 12-month agenda and we'll work you through the agenda and it might add up to a certain dollar fee and we'll just divide that by 12 months. So it's like this very easy arrangement that we'll have with a client. And then what generally happens is the idea is they get so much value from the partnership, they just continue past the 12 months. And so we've got relationships with clients that go on 15, 20 years now. And our relationships evolve from HR compliance to maybe a director of HR to a CHRO as they've grown. And that's the flexibility. So it all got born from this retained model. To today, it helps us weather storms. So COVID, great example. Recruitment was challenging, Jess, right? It was challenging. We had a few key clients that needed work throughout that period. And while it was still profitable in that area, it wasn't as profitable as it is today because all of the retained earnings on the other side of the business were keeping us strong. And so that's that one piece. The other piece is that our retained clients bring recruitment work to us. And also our recruitment clients may turn into retained employer services clients. So there's this like beautiful ecosystem within us that serves each other. And it's proving to be quite a nice model.
Most recruiting businesses, like I'm sure all listeners strive to really understand their clients, to do an excellent job of taking a brief or intake call, whatever terminology you use, like ideally, although this happens less and less these days, going and visiting a client in person, and certainly desires to build a long-term relationship. But it strikes me that you guys have a massive advantage in that you already know that client literally inside out. Like, you're working so closely with them, that must give you a huge head start when it comes to recruiting for that organization, I'm guessing. Jess, what have you found?
Absolutely. It's a huge benefit because we know the culture so well. We know the people that work there extremely well. We really understand the dynamic. And I think that is one of the more challenging things about recruiting for a company that you don't know is just, what does it really mean to work there and be inside the building? And what are the unique dynamics that go on? So we're able to really talk to candidates in a much deeper level to see, like, would this be maybe the right fit for them and vice versa? And it makes it fun to, like, actually get to work with these companies for the long term. And then oftentimes our placements are managers that we're working with down the road to hire for their teams. So
here's what I keep hearing from clients who have switched to Recruiter Flow. They are executing faster, not working longer hours, but using a platform that just makes sense. Recruiter Flow is an AI-first ATS and CRM built specifically for recruitment agencies and executive search firms. No confusing menus, no endless buttons you'll never use. When someone new joins your team, they're up and running in hours, not weeks. And here's the thing. When your recruiters spend less time fighting with software, they spend more time doing what actually matters, having conversations with clients and candidates. Several of our clients at Recruitment Coach have made the switch, and they're telling me it's transforming their operations. If you want to see it in action, book a demo at recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. That's recruitmentcoach.com/recruiterflow. You already understand the benefits of posting video content on LinkedIn. The problem is time. After all, you're a recruiter, not a full-time content creator. Trusted Voice Video was built for busy recruitment business owners who know that video matters, but they don't want another job added to their plate. One 30-minute session per month gives you 30 days of short-form video content. We plan the topics, guide the conversation, edit the footage, and deliver ready-to-post videos. You'll never be stuck wondering what to say. You'll never worry about how you look or sound. We coach you through the session so you come across as clear, confident, and credible, even if you hate seeing yourself on camera. My colleague Sanjay manages the whole process. He already produces this podcast and my own video content, so if you like my content, then why not let us create yours as well? If you want your content working for you 24/7, head to recruitmentcoach.com/video and book a free strategy call.
It's been great.
The other thing that I'll add to that is, Jess was talking about candidates. We're not another yes person to our clients. They bring us in because we challenge them. And so, you know, Jess, you were talking about, like, the, we understand the culture. We also understand, like, the managers and the presidents and the leaders really well. And so, you know, we can say to John, the owner of ABC company, how is this type of candidate going to work with you? I mean, John, we know that you, when you really get your head down, you can be pretty you know, rough to work with. And we can really talk to them very personally about, you know, we've experienced this personality trait. We've experienced, like, how you work and operate under stress as a business owner. How is this person going to interact with this? And whereas I imagine if you're just a contract recruiter that's coming for one job, firstly, you might not even know that information. And secondly, you certainly wouldn't have the relationship to be able to critique personality and the legacy and, like, history of a company. And that gives us a huge competitive advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any, what's the challenge in trying to operate multiple revenue streams simultaneously? I guess I'm, like, because I am trying to build that within my business as well. And because I want what you guys have, right? I love that business model, but the sacrifice for me is focus, right? Focus to get things done, you really need to give it focus. And if your focus is divided, it's harder to get traction with any one thing. At least that's how I'm finding it. But what have you guys found?
I mean, it can be challenging for sure. We try our best to really put people in roles where they can excel and that's the right fit for them, where they can focus. So our recruiters, we do the best we can to just take everything else off their plate so they can just focus on recruiting. Whereas we have other people on the team that specialize in writing job descriptions and working with our assessment tools and onboarding. So we do our best to really partner with one another and identify who is the best resource to facilitate that specific part of a recruitment engagement. But the challenges can be just capacity and sometimes where, you know, there's 10 of us total, you know, so we're all trying to plan accordingly. But recruitment moves quickly. And I think that's where the challenges lie. Whereas with the OD year-long retainers, you have an agenda, you kind of know what is expected, although it is fluid. We adapt to what their needs are in the moment. But recruitment, I mean, you get a call today, we need to hire someone yesterday. And so, making sure all those resources are available when you need it, that tends to be the biggest challenge from my perspective.
That makes a lot of sense. Anything you wanted to add, Lewis?
Yeah. Ownership over functions, I would absolutely recommend. If you've got shared kind of, if you've got different revenue streams, and let's say you just take our model, for instance, training, how am I growing training? How am I growing HR, how am I growing recruitment? The lack of focus on one means that you're really not focusing on any, in my experience. Jess and I are very good at dreaming. When it comes to, you know, getting your head down and, you know, bringing it to reality, that's a whole new challenge. And so having accountability at those different areas, or however you want to segment your company, is probably my biggest suggestion, is making sure that's super clear. And then just from experience, the shared responsibility around growth and business development with the client work is a huge challenge. And it's not that it can't be done, but it's very distracting. It goes back to my point earlier around, while you're working on clients, you're not doing your business development work. While you're working on business development, you're not adding value to your client. And so if at all possible, I would be encouraging anyone to kind of split those responsibilities as best they can. And I know that's hard, but trying there is very important.
Absolutely. Well, I guess if a listener is a one-person business, they have to do both. But you guys have, I'm guessing, Lewis, that you're the business development person and Jess is the, you know, in charge of delivery. Is that how you guys have worked, or?
Yeah, I would say that's pretty close. New business development is my responsibility, and I will try to bring Jessica in as soon as I can to any new work so that the handover is very authentic and not too I suppose stuttery for a company. What they don't want to feel is like, oh, I've been working with you, Lewis, and you've got me through this relationship, and now you're just handing me off to Jessica. So that those interactions have to start really well. The trouble is that, yes, that model is true, but my new business development role is also bringing in business for HR, compliance, OD, training, and recruitment.
Okay.
So, it's quite a shared responsibility. So yes, when it's a recruitment opportunity, when it's it's human capital attraction, it's Jess. When it's not that, it will be someone else in our organization.
Listen, I would love to talk about your delivery, because you have so many things that you do differently. And I think this perhaps comes out of your kind of strong HR background. So, but it's really, really clever how you have differentiated yourself. So many recruitment businesses struggle to differentiate. You know, their service is at least from the client's point of view on the outside, it looks pretty much the same as the company down the road, right? Which then, A, makes it difficult for you to win new business, but B, if the client can't perceive any difference between what you offer versus what their current supplier offers or another one who's pitching, then it's going to come down either to who do they just like better, or more often, price. Who will do it for the less, the least, right? So what's impressive about you guys, you have a really robust offering that is extremely well thought through. Could you highlight a few of the things that you feel you do particularly well for your clients?
Sure. Well, I think one thing we do that is different than a lot of other recruitment firms would be focusing on role clarity in the very beginning. So we will essentially have a 90-minute meeting with a client and really talk in depth about the position itself and get to the core of why is this funded for the organization? Why does this exist? And what are the key accountabilities of the role? So through that, we end up writing a tailored job description that's specific to them, where we can have effective conversations with the candidate right away, where they know clearly what the role is, what the expectations are, what success looks like. And we carry that same document through the whole process. So from that point, we also create an assessment benchmark. We use a specific set of tools that look at behaviors, motivators, some soft skills, but we see a best practice of creating a benchmark, and it all comes from that job description. Then later when they're hired, we help them develop a robust onboarding plan that's tailored to that again. So it's this document that is foundational to the recruitment process, but it also really introduced them to one of our core offerings with organizational development, making sure everyone at your company knows what their role is, what's expected of them, and we're all going in the same direction. So it's one of those things people are like, ugh, all right, how much time do you need in the beginning? Like, you know, we get a little hesitation. And then afterwards, I always hear, you know, I didn't know what to expect, but this was actually very valuable and really helpful. And I want us to do this with another team. I feel like they're not quite sure what everyone is supposed to be doing. And so that often starts another conversation for a different service offering.
Awesome. Now, I just want to highlight, in case people miss it and just break this down a little bit, because I think the difference, and by the way, correct me as we're going through this. So I've heard you describe this as, you mentioned role clarity, but also design. You're not order taking. And I think this is the key difference. Like usually a recruiter, not the best ones, obviously, but many recruiters end up, it's like order taking. The client describes what they're looking for, and then the recruiter tries to go out and find it. But you guys are actually helping them design the role in the first place, right? And then you are writing the job description, not working off their outdated or incomplete job description, right?
Or their ChatGPT job description.
Right. That really has, we've been getting a lot of those lately,
That really has no bearing on what they actually need. It's kind of, they said, oh, I need a plant manager, ChatGPT, create a plant manager role for me. And it really doesn't speak to them. And so that's part of that consultative approach, is that we often talk, and for those that are watching the podcast, you can see behind me the ideal state. We always talk about this concept that we lean into called the ideal state. And we are asking them to tell us what you need in this role in the ideal state, not today, not based on, you know, who was the incumbent in this role that we're now filling, but what do you truly need in this role moving forward? Maybe in 18 months' time, what would you aspire this role to be? So we can start to move you as a company towards that state of being. So it's completely different to, oh, you need 5 years experience and they need a degree and, you know, leadership skills. Well, no, we need to know what you need this role to do in the ideal state. And then we can go from there.
And to add to that, I would say that, you know, sometimes our clients, they don't know what to expect. Maybe they don't hire for that position very often. So they might want all these things and it may or may not be realistic. We've all been in those types of conversations. So we try to advise them on what is realistic and just talk through their certain trade-offs. And they might want all of this at a low compensation. So we'll provide them validated salary surveys to just show like, this is the market and talk through, can we shift the budget or do we need to make a trade-off on skill set? And it's for their benefit, but it's also for our reputation, our benefit. I feel like if you don't have those conversations and then you're not able to find that purple squirrel, then they may just think that, okay, they're not very good. You know, they're not very good at finding or recruiting. It's like, well, that no one was ever going to be successful in that task. And so I think just setting those expectations up front and letting them know really if something's realistic or not, it makes a big difference for them. And then also, just how they understand what you're doing for them and knowing that it's not any lack of skill necessarily. It's just trying to educate them on how this works, what's realistic, all of that.
This is brilliant because what you guys are describing is true consulting, right? And a lot of recruiters have the word consultant on their business card, but it's not really accurate. But what the kind of work you're doing, I think, is real consulting where you're advising, you're challenging, you're bringing insight, and you're helping to shape the brief to ensure a successful outcome for the client.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it helps three people. It helps, most importantly, our clients. Because more often than not, they don't know what they don't know. And so that's one thing. And we're helping them not create a role that's completely unrealistic. Going back to, you know, Jess's purple squirrel analogy. The second person we're helping is the candidate, because we are creating an environment that is more likely to be successful for them. They're going to leave a position probably that they might be, you know, relatively happy with. And we're saying, come and join this company because it could be wonderful for your career. Well, we're creating a higher percentage of likelihood that that is going to be a really successful outcome. And then thirdly, it's us. It's creating an environment where we can be successful, that, you know, we can, and we haven't mentioned here, but we can go above and beyond on our guarantees, which are pretty unique in the not many people offer them, and that way we're not being held to a standard that is completely unrealistic. Like, everybody wins. The challenge is to convince maybe a new client that it's worth these few hours at the start of the process to get it. Now, that's fine with clients that we're already really engaged with. But if it's a brand new client and we're saying, you know, to start the recruitment process, we need 2 or 3 hours. They're like, oh, hang on, the last recruiter just came in for 30 minutes and took an inventory and was off.
Right, exactly. So or just send me some resumes and we'll go from
just
there,
send
right?
me some resumes. And right. We're just like, no, if that's how you want it to be, then that's not us. And fine, if you want to go and work with that type of recruiter who are very successful, right? That's not a problem. Go and do that. But that's just not us. And usually that pushback will generally get a favorable outcome.
Well, what's cool is that you can link your process to, you know, outcomes. So for example, you have phenomenal retention of the people that you place. And I think it's a combination of everything you've described. I would like to learn more about the guarantee and also how that ties into your onboarding process, because I think that's quite unique. So that in itself, I would hope would be compelling enough that the client understands why we're investing some time up front to make sure that this is the right person in the right role and they have longevity, you know, with their business, because ultimately that's going to mean that it, you know, less cost and less time, right? It's an upfront investment of time in order to save lots of headaches down the road, ultimately. But could you share a little more about the guarantee and the onboarding? Because that's another unique thing that you guys offer.
We have a lot of debates about our guarantee length. So we do offer a 12-month guarantee, and it's really been great for us. We do see a lot of success. We know that that's unusual for the market for very valid reasons. But for us, we have such a thorough process that we do have 90% success rate of our placement staying a year or longer. But it does give us a chance to stay really close to our new hire and the client. So we structure it for their 30, 60, 90 days. We're meeting with them at least once a month for that period of time. We have them complete some assessment tools in the recruitment process. So we actually bring that into the discussion. And a lot of it is how people like to communicate, how they respond under pressure, like how they typically approach decision-making and problem-solving. So it creates really great discussion among the new hire and their manager. And then we check in with them quarterly at a minimum for until they hit their year mark. If there are challenges, then we will support that as best we can. So sometimes we are spending more time with them. And other times, you know, the check-in might be quicker when you're at, you know, 9 months. But it also allows us to just see, like, how's business? Do you have any other hires or any needs coming up? And just stay, you know, pretty dialed in to you know, their plans for hiring in the future.
This is just genius, because I think, now I understand why it happens, and I'm not like trying to make anyone feel bad if, because I know I've been guilty of this myself as a recruiter when I was running a desk, is you make a placement, you celebrate, and then you're on to the next. You know, the relentless, you know, deadlines is part of what's driving that, right? It is, okay, great, I filled that one. Thank goodness, check that off. Now I can work on these other like 8 things that I've got to fill. And you kind of, that one, you know, you're on to the next thing. And that is not ideal. I think everyone would admit. Not only missing business opportunities, as you mentioned, Jess, but also it's so much better to be aware if there is any issues, be aware of it early and be able to influence and resolve, rather than the worst case scenario, which is you get back to calling that client 3 or 6 months later to see, you know, if they have any more business, and they go, oh, well, Johnny, who you placed, isn't here anymore. And you're like, oh, whoops. I didn't know that. That's not a good conversation, right?
So right.
I think the way you've designed it is very smart.
It's not just like it's not just like a subjective kind of reason that we came up with this. There was pretty good data to suggest that if someone stays for 6 months, they're probably going to stay for 12. The big window is the 6 month window. That's the area why we kind of plug in a little bit more intentionally early on with our personality assessments, with the benchmarking, with the coaching, all of those things at, you know, 30, 60, 90 days and then 6 months, because that's the area where everyone's figuring each other out, you know, in real life. And you know, once you get to 6 months, we've probably got past a phase where it's going to be, oh, I'm going to leave at 9. You know, yes, it can happen. And usually it's not because of the company. It's because they may get like this really great opportunity that, you know, they get once in a blue moon and they've got to take it. But usually it will be a successful outcome for 12 months. And then also the coaching piece. It allows us to kind of qualify and coach with our clients. So, you know, whereas in other situations, a client may go, man, Johnny's just not doing well, and it will be all on the candidate. We're able to go, well, tell me why. help me understand this. Like, we're really having a conversation about it. And it comes down to the fact that, you know, we go back to the onboarding plan and they didn't receive the training to do it. And, you know, in the churn of private business, it's just, oh, you know, Johnny's not hit his numbers again. Off we go. We'll get another Johnny. It's probably on a little bit on the employer's side of coaching, developing, training, doing their part in the onboarding to make it a successful outcome. And we're able to have those conversations. So we kind of help them help themselves.
No, wait a second.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
What is the coaching element of the onboarding? So it's, you guys are actually giving coaching. Is this for the client, the candidate, or is it both?
So it will be both. We usually will get both the candidate and the manager together. And that will be 30, 60, 90 days, 6 months, 9 months, and 12 months.
Oh, so this is a meeting with both parties at the same time?
Oh, yes.
And using
the onboarding plan that we have created at the start, you know, to say, hey, you wanted to be fully ready in this part of the role at 6 months. How have we done there? Are we fully ready at this part of the role, or do we need some particular focus over the next month or two? And we're able to move those timelines, those readiness lines. You know, we wanted you to be fully ready and operational to run inventory by 9 months, and we're at 6 months. How ready do you think we are? Do we need more training? Do we need more focus? Rather than at 9 months saying, they're not ready, I needed them ready, off you go. I don't need that person. I need someone else.
I will say, it depends on the situation too, because sometimes like a client might call and like they might be frustrated. Like, I feel like we're not where we should be. And then we might talk to them one-on-one and just like, all right, let's talk through it.
For sure.
What's going on? What sort of, have you discussed this with them? Sometimes they're like, well, mate, kind of. It's like, you know, there's a lot of sometimes people just need to get in the same room and communicate instead of working off of assumptions. And so we kind of help with that. And then I might talk to a candidate and they might feel like they're just not getting enough time with a certain person to really understand a process. So when we bring them together, we're able to kind of ask some questions in a way that doesn't feel uncomfortable or confrontational, because we're just checking in. And we might know a little bit, but it's just, you know, talking through like, all right, how are you guys doing on this specific your progress here? And we have a readiness chart that shows, you know, it's directional, but this person should be 100% ready to do this part of their role within 6 months. If we're way off target, then we can hone in on that and talk about that specifically and then discuss, okay, well, what would need to happen for you to be able to do that? And sometimes, you know, things change in their business where it's okay. They like intentionally push that to a different date, but it's just to help them really communicate and talk. And sometimes as a new hire, you may or may not feel comfortable going to your manager and say like, I feel like I'm not getting it, or this has been really hard for me, where we've built such a trust relationship with the candidate in the recruiting process that we try to, you know, they're one-on-one private conversations, but, and we always are going to maintain that confidentiality, but using that information in a way that can make it better for them at work, and just helping coaching and talking through all of that. And it's been really helpful. I think sometimes people just leave because that feels easier than having a tough conversation.
Exactly.
And so we're there to make sure that happens.
This is brilliant. I think what you guys have, I really admire what you've built, and especially the tools, the frameworks, the essentially the intellectual property that you're really bringing a whole level of rigor to this process that most any size of company, but especially I would imagine like the mid-market or family-owned businesses really don't have any of this stuff. And so they're getting such a tremendous amount of value from you guys. It's really, really well thought through. Even like your model that's behind you, Lewis. What is that called again? Ideal
this
state.
This is the ideal state approach. Yeah.
It's so cool. Now you guys are also doing some really interesting things from a business development marketing point of view. Could you speak to that briefly?
I suppose that's probably my area of focus. I mean, most of it has come from your guidance in Recruitment Coach. Just think that that's been just a wonderful, you know, wonderful engagement with you ever since, you know, Jessica brought it up to the group to work on. I don't see it as like crazy innovation, honestly. I just see it as ways of authentically introducing ourselves to people that don't know us. We really don't. And I pause on even some of the stuff that is suggested on Recruitment Coach because it feels some, especially the churn of like emails and things like that. I'm like, oh, that doesn't feel us. But I mean, when you do it, you see the results and it's been great. But, you know, simple things like leveraging, Cincinnati's a very, very connected city, and simple things about like leveraging network, and even saying leveraging network feels a little transactional, but doing your best to make the most of the people you know is a big piece of what I do. So there's a lot of networking, but there's also a lot of like intentional requests. So for instance, you know, I'll be able to see you, Mark, are connected with Jessica. And in an authentic way, I will say, hey, I've done some research on Jessica's group Alinity. They really fit a nice profile of who we have traditionally done great work with. Could you tell me a little bit about Jessica? Do you think that would be it'll be worth an introduction to have a conversation with her? And you know, more often than not, it's I met Jessica at a conference. I don't think an introduction would be good for me. You know, it's not really a relationship, but we're having those authentic touch points. And then, you know, from there, we're trying to get some automation around staying connected with people in an authentic way. We have a podcast, Business at Its Best. That's really about celebrating great business outcomes of companies in the tri-state. So we'll talk about a big win of a local mid-market group and talk about the lessons that we could all take from that example of like business at its best. That's been helpful to raise, and it's very much on brand, raising awareness of our brand about celebrating the mid-market groups. And then, you know, we're in the process of taking our intellectual property, the Ideal State Approach, to market in a book, a diagnostic tool, and then ultimately a podcast as well, and go and use that model to create some business development activity. What I will say though is, and I fall foul of this a lot, there's a lot of priorities there. And that is, it goes back to what you were saying, Mark, it's very difficult to remain focused on one thing or another. And, you know, I just encourage people to have a, you know, a car park list, a parking lot list of I'd like to get to that, but this week or this month, this is my focus. And I'm by no means, very good at that. But I would encourage people to go, no, this is my focused area on this month.
Definitely. In fact,
so we've got lots.
Yeah. A lot of cool things, which are sort of combination of short, medium, long-term, tactical, strategic. So it's a good mix. And, but what you're saying about focus, like that applies not just to business development, but everything, right? At Recruitment Coach, we call it your next right thing. Like, what is the singular next thing that you should be focused on right now? And try and almost push everything else to the side until you get that kind of to the finish line.
Yeah, and Jess and I are not very good at that.
No,
I'll be
that is
totally
not my
candid.
Strength.
You know, we're quite visionary in our approach. Like even like last night, Jess, I couldn't really like shut my brain off, because Jess and I spoke about this awesome concept of Club 365 or the 365 Club that would be an exclusive group of people that get past their 12-month guarantee. They would be initiated into Club 365. And this is completely conceptual, by the way, but this is Jess and I, how we work. We're like, oh, yeah, this will be great.
We'd love then, that. We could have networking
then,
events.
And then
it'd
we've
so
completely
fun.
Distracted
yeah,
ourselves over
yeah.
here. And that, so Club 365 is this community of people that have stayed 12 months and, you know, every 6 months we'll bring them all together, we'll bring a speaker in. You know, it'll be this really cool way of staying connected, because ultimately we're placing senior leaders, and what a great way of authentically staying connected to them, to remain front of mind, coming from, you know, stuff that you've taught us, Mark, on Recruitment Coach, to use those relationships to then scale the next one and the next one. But again, what we've done is added another thing to the parking lot that, yeah, that we think is going to be really cool, but it's distracting me from this thing. So yeah, we fall foul of that an awful lot. We're constantly trying to do better, but you know, it's what energizes us, and we just,
yeah,
it really does drive us to be more successful.
Awesome. I love the constant ideas and concepts is fantastic. Yeah, you're right. It's the prioritization of those things, and I'm sure you can execute all of them in time, but it's just a question of, you know, I like your parking lot analogy as well. So
the difficulty is saying no to yourself. It's, you know, it's, yeah, it's hard to say no to others. It's even harder to say no to yourself. And just being able to go, Lewis, that is a parking lot item. It needs to move until you get traction and consistency with this one. And that is a huge issue that anyone listening really encouraged to do, to get a discipline around.
Absolutely. I am fortunate that I've got the wonderful Lisa Killian as my COO. And so, because I'm the like ideas, like till, you know, not able to switch off my brain. And then like on a daily basis, I'm like sending her voice notes, or if we're having a meeting, then I'm like, what about this idea? And she, and we, as you guys know, we record and transcribe everything. So it all gets captured, but then she'll go away and actually get into our project management system, Asana, and be able to like slot it into the right parking places and go, okay, that's, I like that idea, Mark. We're not going to lose that idea. We're going to put it over here. But right now,
how polite.
Let's just, yes, continue focusing on this, which, you know, right? So she's good at managing me that way.
That, but you said was a priority last week that we absolutely had to do. And now you're like, well, maybe we don't need to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So look, it's one thing to, you've built an undeniably exceptional service for your clients, and sounds like a really terrific culture internally for your team. So building something is one thing, but scaling it is another. What is the vision going forward, and how are you guys going to take things from here?
I think it's easy to get into the day to day. You said, oh, what a great culture for our employees. I think it can be a frustrating culture.
Okay.
You know, there's new initiatives. We're a 25, we say that we're like a 25-year-old startup. There's still this energy that I can imagine for some of the employees. We run lean, can be frustrating at times. And, you know, they'll say that, and that's cool. But I'd rather them be frustrated with too much work, too much energy, too much craziness than be bored. You know, I think there's an energy there. I think one thing, as we look to kind of continue to scale and grow, is staying really focused on our values and our culture. We just went through a bit of work on how we wanted to define our culture over the next 3 years, because for us, values stay constant, culture evolves. And so an example of that is, you know, you might have a startup that's culturally very entrepreneurial, driving, gritty, all of those kind of buzzwords that happen in a startup. They get acquired, they go through certain phases of funding, and now they need to be operationally more sound. So their culture has to evolve to be operationally more sound. Now their values could stay the same, but culturally they're trying to be a little bit more structured. And so we need to focus on our culture of, you know, being continue to be mission driven. We want to make sure we're, as we grow, we understand the duty of care that we have to our clients, our community, our people. But we also want to make sure we're continuing to focus on being curious, learning, growing, because that ultimately will help us to grow. We want to continue to be collaborative. That's how we're successful, and how we win together. And I think if we continue to focus on those kind of behaviors, that kind of culture, the growth will happen because everyone's involved in that. Over the next 3 years, we do have some things to be aware of. You know, Bill's on a plan to start to be more part-time at the end of 3 years. So we're in a transition phase. That's a big focus of ours. And then also really just trying to get consistent with our growth. We came to the recruitment coach to stop the roller coaster of up and down and up and down of recruitment. And our employer services helps with that. It steadies that, but it still is up and down. And so over the next 3 years, we're really going to try to focus in on bringing predictable revenue back to the recruiting talent solutions part of our business. And that will involve everyone, and not just myself in business development, but getting everyone involved in this brand championing of Alinity, leveraging relationships, building out growth within your little area of responsibility that in turn will grow the company. And we incentivize that. We have really nice profit sharing. You know, when we're all successful, we will all win. But we want to maintain this ultimate culture of collaboration and growth together, and not incentivize individual growth through commissioning and things like that. So we want to stay true to ourselves while bringing everyone along in the growth process. And there's a lot there, but
can that's awesome. I love the distinction between keeping the values constant whilst shifting culture. I've not heard anyone else talk about that before. Jess, you wanted to add something?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about how to get all the work done. I mean, that's right now a bottleneck for us. It's just our recruiters, they are phenomenal, and they have a lot on their plate. And so I think a key for us in terms of scaling is to identify where do they bring the most value and find ways to get all those other little pieces done in another way. So, you know, VA, where that's something that we've learned a lot about through you, Mark, which has been fantastic. We are going to pursue that, and having someone that can write the job ads, manage the ATS, that can understand the positions well enough to do research and source, that can go through applications. And then that way our recruiters, like, just focus on building relationships and interviewing candidates and talking to your client. But right now they're doing everything. And we're in this place where I think they like doing everything. It's like they're comfortable. They know if they do it, then it will be done in a way that meets their standard. But so we're kind of in that place of growth where coaching and teaching and training on how to let some of those things go, and then see how much more we can get done when you're focused on the right things. And then just adding headcount. The thing that's been hard for us is finding recruiters that thrive in this consulting environment where you have to feel comfortable having those conversations with your client, and it can be hard. And so hiring for us is something we're working on, but I would say making sure that we set everyone up for success, I think it's going to be key for us if we want to continue to scale.
And what Jess just said there, sorry, Mark, is the healthy balance between getting it done and growth. And when you split those responsibilities, you get that. So Jess, getting it done, me, grow. And Jess is obviously grow as well, but she's like, Lewis, but capacity. And there's that like healthy balance that you don't get if your capacity operations, growth in one role. And so you have this really cool like check and balance within each other across our group to be able to show that. So, and you know, I think that's a great example of how that gets managed well.
I love that. There's a couple more things I wanted to ask you guys about quickly. If you have time, we're a little over.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
One is, are you comfortable talking about the comp? Because most, not all, but I'd say the vast majority of recruiting firms, it's a low base or no base, and then is mostly performance based, you know, commissions. But you guys coming from more of out of a consulting practice have approached it totally differently. And I'm wondering how have you found the pros and cons of that?
Yes. I mean, the con is when business is slow, you have heavy payroll, and that can be stressful for a business owner, you know, where we're trying to always make sure that we're not upside down in terms of payroll and that it's sustainable. But what we found to be a huge benefit would be that our recruiters, they're not incentivized by quick commission. And we can even convey that to our clients where we're not pushing anyone on you. Frankly, we're not on commissions, and we have a 12-month guarantee. So it is really in our best interest to make sure we're getting you the right hire for the long term. And that's been great. We've built so much trust with our clients because they know that everyone's incentivized to do what is really in their best interest. And the way we motivate our team is not always by the commission check. I mean, we have a really great profit share at the end of the year, and that's like we all win together. So everyone does know it will pay off in another way, but they have substantial salaries, and it can be, it's based on the level of experience and even the level of searches that they're on. So we'll look at like the GP of each recruiter, and so it does tie into like the level of engagement that they're responsible for delivering on. But you know, and if there's a performance issue, then we just have that conversation, and it's not as focused on the commission aspect. But it's been really great for our culture. We want there to be fun competition and energy, but we don't want it to be where, you know, we're cutthroat. We're like a sales organization. You have your number on the wall. And I think that works for other companies really well. But for us, it's more about attention to detail, taking the right amount of time and not having to worry about if I don't get this fill, then I'm not going to be bringing home what I need to for the month, you know? So, yeah.
It's so interesting. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think, and it becomes another differentiator. I'm sure clients really buy into that as well and see, you know, perceive that as in everyone's interests are aligned here. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is the local, you're very locally focused business, if I'm correct. Are most of your clients in Cincinnati or?
Yeah, the majority, I would say. Yeah. We get taken outside of Cincinnati by clients, maybe through like private equity or, you know, they've got another location. But most of the time, the relationship will start in the tri-state area.
Okay, fantastic. And is that the game plan going forward, or are you, you know, going to become a national company?
You know, I started out very much like we should take over the world. I've since softened that outlook. There is plenty of business in the tri-state for us to grow in the way we want to grow. You know, going back to what Jess has said, a lot of our, you know, partners within the community will be saying, man, you could grow 50% a year, or, you know, this type of stuff, you know, in terms of growth numbers. We plan for a 15% growth year over year. And, you know, people that are in the recruitment business will be like, man, you should be doing this and this and this and this. That'll be cool. Not outside of our model, though. The model looks after our people. And as soon as we start to change that model, it starts to become a bit more competitive. The team aspect goes. And we just want to make sure that we have consistent growth. We look after our clients well, and we look after our people the best in terms of financial, in terms of, you know, work-life integration. We're fully hybrid. We offer local offices, but there's no expectation that they're there, but they can use it. We espouse to have unlimited PTO, where, you know, get your work done and take the PTO that you need to feel well rested and balanced to do your job. And we want to create that value proposition as an employer, and that growth comes through steady growth in our opinion, whatever that is worth.
Yeah. No, but look, 15% year on year compounds significantly over time.
It does.
Yeah, that's awesome. Guys, we could keep talking for ages, but that was, I think we need to call time. Jessica, Lewis, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun getting to know you even better and sharing your insights, you know, outside of our coaching group. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Mark.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mark.
All right. Awesome. Take care. See you soon. So what were your key takeaways from this conversation? Here are a couple of mine. First of all, think beyond the traditional recruiting revenue model. Lewis and Jessica built their recruiting practice alongside HR consulting, organizational development, retained search, and RPO-style projects. Multiple revenue streams make the business far more stable and create deeper client relationships at the same time. Secondly, the placement is not the finish line. Their structured onboarding process is the best I've ever seen, includes regular check-ins with both the client and the new hire throughout the first year. This creates accountability on both sides and dramatically increases the chances that the hire succeeds long term. Just before I go, I have a favor to ask. Would you please leave our podcast a review on Apple Podcasts? Not just hitting the 5 stars, but writing a few words as well. It really means a lot to me and helps us reach and serve more recruiters. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.